Hello, and this week we've got a very special guest. He's a former EA employee. He was tearing up FIFA in the 90s, and he knows all about negativity and communication around the foot community. You probably guessed it. It's esports commentator and Twitch streamer Chewboy joining us this week, as well as the Foot Economist, who I definitely failed to introduce once again, so look out for him. But we're also going to be speculating about the World Cup and leaks and how to bring the hype. We'll also do a review with Chew, Primer Kotcha, and we're going to talk briefly about pros cheating and blocking each other. I'm Ben, and you can hear all that and more on this week's Foot Weekly Podcast. Hello and welcome to week 23 of the Foot Weekly Podcast, and with us is a man who's returning after probably about 6 months since he was last on at the very beginning, the capture event, I believe. We had the pleasure of Chewboy himself joining us back then, and he's back to talk about what's gone on, I guess, over the last 6 months and what FIFA's like now. How are you, Chew? Are you well?
I'm doing great, actually. Just woke up. It's like, it's early in the morning. Well, not too early, like 10 o'clock right now in Canada on the West Coast. And I'm doing great. Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And I believe you're moving from the West Coast to the East quite soon. Is that correct?
Yes, in about like on Tuesday, I'm going to be moving over to Toronto. It's when Drake asked you to come by. You know, you gotta you can't say no.
It's not just for Giovinco then that you're moving.
No, actually, it's pretty ironic. I mean, I remember I was thinking about it for a while, like moving. And then Toronto won the MLS Cup. I'm like, oh, everybody's going to think I'm going because Toronto.
Glory hunting, <yeah. laughs>
Exactly. Because I even told the Whitecaps that I was leaving, and they were just like, they had this look on their face like, are you freaking kidding me? Is it because of that? And I was like, no, guys. Like, I really decided like a month before that happened. But yeah.
So, what is the reason for your move, if you don't mind telling us?
I think the main reason really is some of the listeners might know, I do a lot of the esports analyst work for FUT Champions when it comes to those tournaments. And the flights from Vancouver are just nuts. It's like 9.5 to 10 hours to get from Vancouver to London. And there was a time, I think I went to London. This was around FIFA launch. I went to London 3 times in 5 weeks. And it just like nearly broke me. I remember just being like flat out exhausted. So I was like, all right, one, I need to shorten that time down a bit. Versus Toronto to London is about 6.5 hours. So I'm like, all right, 3 hours saved. I mean, not perfect, still pretty good improvement, I would say.
And I guess because also, you know, you have to get to the other end and be like alive and excitable and ready to.
Exactly. And like when I get to these tournaments, it's like I always like the North America tournaments because I can like I'm just already myself like jet lag. I'm a person that gets easily hit by jet lag. So when I get there, like I just could barely think, even like the day or two after, like on FUT Champions, I'm like barely like people see me on the screen like I'm doing all right, but like, I'm barely like even like gathering thoughts together because I'm just like so behind like my thought process. So I'm hoping that, you know, with a shorter time, it's less jet lag, I would say, since it's only a 5 hour difference between London and Toronto. In terms of time difference. So I'm hoping that it'll improve my, I guess, performances in these events when they are in Europe.
A lot of people at the moment have been talking about how, you know, there's been a lot of negativity, obviously, in the community. We talked about it in the last couple of weeks. So I don't want to bang on about it too much. But I think a lot of it is quite misfounded based in this bubble, because I'm pretty sure if you look at, I think it's the Q3 earnings from EA, they are like better than last year.
Yeah, I bet they did all right, didn't they?
Their in-game purchases are up 40%. So people are obviously buying more packs than they did in previous years.
It's actually interesting. They're like single game sales are down like marginally, like very, very marginally, but their in-game purchases are up a ton compared to last year, which, you know, doesn't necessarily, they don't break it down by game. So you can't necessarily like point to, oh, like FIFA 18 is sold.
But considering Battlefront removed the opportunity to do that, then it's got to be really from FIFA, right? I don't know, Chew, you probably know. I don't know whether there are any other games which get close to what FIFA does for EA.
For digital-wise? Like digital revenue?
In-game purchases?
No.
Maybe Madden?
Madden Mobile does all right. Madden Console. Madden Mobile is surprisingly good, or at least when I was there. But in terms of digital, it's nothing is even close to Ultimate Team. Like Ultimate Team on its own is, I think, I mean, at least when I was back when I was there, Ultimate Team on its own would be the second biggest game in EA.
Just the actual mode.
The actual mode.
So that's not FIFA. Including the purchase of the game.
Yeah, exactly. If it was just on its own, it'd be like the second big. It's like, yeah, it's
that's wild.
It's stupid. That game is like, I mean, I remember back when, I think when I joined, it was making like under 100 million in FIFA 12 or something like that, maybe like 70 or 80. And then to see what it is now, I mean, it's probably getting closer to a billion on its own. It's incredible.
It's crazy. And I just wanted to, we talked a bit about what you do, and we did have quite a good question, which is a nice way to kind of let people know a bit more about yourself. He's asking, obviously, as a previous EA employee, how easy has it been to make the transition to sort of a Twitch streamer from doing that? Which, I mean, I know you were communications, but it wasn't like you were coming out and talking to everyone.
Yeah, it's, it was, I guess, maybe I couldn't have asked for better. It was smoother than I would have expected. I mean, you still always get that thing. I mean, there's one thing on Twitch, I would say, is that on Twitch, people, how do I put it? People like to grow with you, like from when you, you know, you're starting small. So the thing with me is if I'm coming from, you know, the game side, it's like there's less trust because it's not like I'm a guy that made it straight from Twitch. It's like I was known somewhere else. I was known from the other side, from the enemy, and then coming in. So you won't get as much people like getting you, building up with you from the ground up. So
sort of like rallying around you in the same way.
Exactly. I think that's probably one of the, I think that's one thing that people do well. I mean, people who have done well on Twitch, that's one thing they have is like, you know, they were so good at building their own community. Yeah. It was, it's their own community. I didn't have my own community. It was just like a FIFA community that I gave information to. And then I was out of it. So I remember the biggest fear I had was like, I mean, if I don't have information to give people, do people care? And I guess it turns out that they did. Like, I guess I was an interesting enough person to exist without the need of giving people information about the game. Like, because again,
you were very charismatic.
Oh, thank you.
The way that you went about the communication was charismatic enough that I think you developed fans in a way.
Oh, thanks.
And also, Joran's other question is, obviously, you're very much into FIFA now, but actually, before you went to EA, were you a FIFA fan? Like, did you play FIFA as much? And
Oh yeah. Well, I would say I wasn't into Ultimate Team until I joined EA. So my history with FIFA is, I mean, I was playing it since that first one, the 94 one on Genesis. I think I still have that somewhere at home. So since Genesis, I went all the way up to, I think my FIFA, like, heyday prime was when I was in college. This shows that I'm old, but college I was playing, it was FIFA 04 to 06. It was when, like, I was in my, it was my boys, we were all in the dorm, like, we'd be skipping classes for, like, 2v2, like, FIFA tournaments in one of my buddies' rooms. I think FIFA 05, like, I know all the cheese in FIFA 05. Like, I know how to score directly because, you know, they didn't have patches.
There was one game where you could just, like, Henri particularly was really good at it. You sort of ran along the top of the box. The defenders couldn't really track you, and then you just shoot across goal, and it would go in, like 99% of the time.
Yeah, that might have been 02 or 04. I remember, like, 04, I think that's when they did, like, a load-driven, like, a triple-tap cross, and then if you just triple-tap cross to the back post, there's always a guy there. 05... they had this free kick mechanic where it's like you would actually, you know, with your cursor, you'd place where you want to hit the free kick with certain power, like on the ball. You hit what part of the ball you want to hit. If you hit the, 45 degrees top right, certain amount, like a few bars, like it'd always go off the goalkeeper and, like, go in. Like, every time. And they had no patches back then, right? So it's like,
it's crazy to think, like, free kicks this year compared to that. That was a free kick was almost a guaranteed goal back then, but now.
Exactly, right?
A couple of, or many people have messaged us over the course of the year to say that they've not scored a free kick this year.
Oh, yeah.
I'd just say get yourself Ronaldinho and it will change things. But apart from that, it is a good point. And the other thing, I suppose, on this whole thing of, like, your role in being a community manager, etc., in terms of your communication at the time was obviously pretty positive, I think, overall. And EA don't seem to have, I don't know, replace that, would that be fair to say? And Jimmy on Twitter is asking, what are they doing now and why is it lacking and what can they do in the future to kind of improve things, basically?
So actually, tying into the last question is, like, from I think after 06, you know, actually it was funny enough. I used to play whatever my friends played. I used to play PES from 07, 08. Then I took a kind of a hiatus from sports games. I got really into Call of Duty and like Rock Band and Mass Effect, stuff like that. So I only came back into FIFA at 11 and 12, and then 12 I got hired at EA. I was playing Ultimate Team. And my job at the time, like the reason they hired me is because there's this new thing called Ultimate Team, and it's pretty big. And the marketing department needed to figure out a way to like be able to better communicate that with the community, because it was obviously, you know, a lot of potential, and they just need someone dedicated to breaking down, because it is a complicated game when you think about it. So being able to like break it down for the masses so they could understand the game better. And I guess the thing is now is that there's no direct person who does that now. I think that's where the, you know, people seem to lack of communication. I still think they're more open. I feel like they're more open than when I was there, to be honest with
you. Yeah, I mean, sorry, just to interrupt quickly, but one of the things that people forget is patch notes which pop up on your screen, those in-game messages. I mean, we didn't have any of that. It was just like, sometimes it would just be, completely unexpected.
And I used to write those things. Like, so when I read them, I'm like, because I guess I set the template for those. So they still use the template that I use. That we work on.
Wait, did you coin "Hey FIFA fans"?
Hey FIFA fans. Sorry, that's me. That just kind of stuck, you know, because because the thing with patch notes is that they have to go through a lot of approvals from people, from the execs, things like that. So it's like I forgot what I said instead of "Hey FIFA fans," but then I think my boss at the time was just kind of like, "Oh, just make it fans." Like, I was like, "All right," and then we just kind of stuck with it. So when I see the patches, I see like for instance the one with where it shows like the degree turns of passes or whatever, that one I was like, holy crap, like they would never let me do that before. So
yeah.
You know, like go that detail. I remember seeing the details of that title up there. I'm like, yo, that's like, to me I was like, Jesus Christ. I mean, to everybody else it's like, oh, I mean, that's what you should have put in the first place, but for me I was just like, oh wow. Like even with Chemgate, like I never expected them to go that into detail.
Well, I guess
with that,
A question that I've always had is why, I mean, from your perspective, why not go into that much detail? Like, what's the harm in explaining mechanics like that?
Well, I mean, so, okay, I guess what's the best analogy I can put to sort of describe it?
Is it too complex to actually explain? I mean,
well, it's like, okay, so I think one thing is also, a lot of these things also tie into what is the company's like, just you know how like you see a difference between how like Activision is different from the way like the Fortnite team acts. Like it's just like the way the company is built. Like if they're not communicated from the start, then it's hard to get to that point.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if it's a community that's not necessarily like, has always been communicative.
Sort of the culture they've established.
The culture, right? That's the word I was looking for. And two, it's like, all right, let's say you have like a restaurant, right? And this is a real life example, because there's a restaurant in Vancouver that just has like the best wings like ever. Like nobody knows why, but like let's say you have a restaurant and you got the secret recipe that brings people to your restaurant, your company. There's a secret sauce that you make the wings with. Ultimate Team is that secret sauce. And it's like, do you want to tell everybody what is in the sauce, the exact ingredients of the sauce, because you don't know whether if something changes, does that make everything else collapse? Ultimate Team is like an exact, it's like a company's like wet dream, right? Yeah. It's a company's wet dream in terms of like how much revenue it makes. I mean, like let's be honest, like a company's always gonna want to make money, and like if any company had Ultimate, any company would die to have Ultimate Team. So it's like, if you tell everybody what the secret sauce is, are you worried that
so you think it's more of a result of like them basically wanting to protect their IP? I mean, that really just like not wanting to like give their information to like a competitor like Pez or something like that, and, like, you know, the angle of, you know, how much you know, the percentage of passes that someone's going to complete, you know, if they're passing from this angle and they're not looking at them, like that kind of stuff. You think is they don't tell us that more just because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to give that information to another company, a competitor, whereas it's not what maybe some of the people in the FIFA community think, which is, well, there's this big conspiracy theory where, you know, sometimes it's like deep in the code that sometimes it's going to give another player an advantage that like we don't know about. It's not that they're hiding that. It's more, as you said, it's protection of the IP.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think it's even like. I don't think it's necessarily like protection from like competitors, because maybe it's part of that, because I know that like one thing that I'll always give the developers, because I was in the marketing department, there's the developer department, they're very different. One thing I always give the developers is that they always have their eyes on Pez no matter what. No matter, like, even though like they'll have like, they could have 99% market share, they're still always like, when Pez came out, when I was there, they would buy copies of Pez and give it to everybody and be like, play this, tell me what you think, tell me exactly where does the game suck, where is the game good, just tell me everything. So because a lot of the developers are the guys that were there when Pez was dominant, so they still have that in mind, like, all right, we can't slip on that. But in my opinion, I mean, I think the reason why we have a lot of these issues is because Pez is a weak competitor, but we'll probably get to that later. So I don't know if it's in terms of like, revealing it to competitors, but just kind of like, it's that and like, I don't think the company was, when the company was founded, it wasn't that time of like internet giving visibility, your company giving visibility to everything that the company does in this internet age, where it's like, you're direct with the people playing the game, you have communities, things like that.
The FIFA community just wasn't that size, was it? I mean, it wasn't, the Twitter presence just wasn't there. Even things like Twitch weren't anywhere near the level they are now. And I mean, it was mainly the forums, really. I mean, I just don't see, I think you got a point. It's like, well, at that point, how much communication could you do? Because there wasn't actually that many people to communicate to, essentially.
Exactly. And then like, I think I would say like FIFA 11, 12, that Twitter stuff came along and that, where you got to be more direct with communities. And it's like, yeah, that old culture, resisting the change to this new kind of culture. So it's not necessarily like trying to prevent competitors from knowing stuff. It's just like our reluctance, where you're like it's me trying to change my own habits. I'm at 30, but it's like, how, like, let's say I'm a person that's impatient. It's like, oh, Chew, you got to be patient now. Like, how easy is that for me to do, where it's like, I've been set in my ways in this way, but then the environment is telling me to be like this. So it's like a slower, it's like they're getting to where the community wants. It's just that they get there very slowly, in my opinion. Where they will, I think they will start to like be more, and in my opinion, that they definitely have been way more open than I would ever expect. Like KemGate, I never expected them to go that deep. I was just like, holy crap.
Like, I mean, it was really great that they did that in a way, but I wondered whether they would, just because of like the potential for it to become a bit of a legal wrangle, because someone could have potentially pursued them on it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that's another reason, is because, and I can't necessarily go into full detail, but it's, people don't realize the amount of financial and I guess legal like complications that happen to people, just like in terms of like what's there. It's probably the most legally financially like constricting game, where it's just like licenses, I don't even know, like that's the first thing I noticed when I got that. I was like, holy crap, like all these little things that you might think are just like small things, it's like that could have a huge implication. So it's like, I remember there was one story, there's one thing that happened in my first year. It's like, I remember I announced like a new team this season like way early. Right. Usually they only announce it on the day of.
Right.
I remember I said something about like, I said it like 2 days before. And like one of the guys who, watches, obviously has a, watches the revenue and stuff like that. It's like, it was like, dude, why'd you say that early? I was like, oh, people want to know. It's like, yeah, we just lost like $200,000. So there's things like that where it's like any little change can offset something, and you don't want to risk that.
Right.
So you don't want to, because I feel like complete shit the rest of the day, because it's like, yeah, I was the cause of this. So I think that has a part of it where it's like, you don't know what's like, I think that's why like Ultimate Team hasn't changed much over the years, except for maybe FIFA 17, is because any little change to any part can offset the stream that has been working so well. So that's why you don't see, people like a representative from the company like wanting to be out there talking all the time, because literally like, dude, I don't even know what to, like, again, I can't go into detail, but there's been times where like I almost like fucked everything up. like you would not
and that's believe. that's just because of the communication with,
just because I said something public, right? I said something early that could that probably might not have happened in the future. Like I could have messed everything up, like chopping block stuff. You want to be the guy that says that? Do you want to be that guy?
their job, your job was on the line. I guess whoever's communicating, their job is on the line.
Yeah, you have to be very cautious. Moves,
you know, big money's involved, and you think I imagine your salary wasn't even near 200,000. So it's a lot of it.
No. It definitely was not. You know,
it's quite a few chew boys. They potentially lost it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's like at least like 6 or 7 chew boys or something like that. But yeah, so it's like.
No, yeah, it's a really interesting point. And, you know, on this whole kind of how you handle promotions, a lot of people get annoyed at lack of content. But I'm assuming, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I've mentioned this a few times on Twitter, but a lot of the reason why you don't see this kind of constant stream of content is because they have to think about how they hype people up. So you can't have a constant level of like amazing content because people don't realize when they're getting good content then. It's just like a continual flow, no?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that there could be more in certain times. Like, I think this time between, it's usually, you know, the post team of the year, between team of the year and FUB birthday and team of the season, like, there's these gaps. I think people want things, like for me, like with Prime Icons right now with the release schedule, like, I mean, I can't think back to, I think it was, what, FIFA 15, where they did the schedule thing. Like, I'm still not like, is it as bad? It's as bad as that. But at the same time, I'm like, the reason I'm not mad about primes, like, I wish I could get all the primes at once. That would be cool. But I'm like, if we didn't have Throwback Thursdays, how bored would we actually be? Wouldn't we be like twice as bored? Because what if there wasn't anything to replace that? So I think, yeah, I would say the community's appetite for content has definitely risen over the years, especially when it comes to, you know, because also I think content creators like myself included have a part to that where it's like we literally have to continue to keep people entertained. I think also Twitch has kind of sped up that appetite because you want to see the thing now. You know, like, you know, before it was just like, all right, YouTube video, you might wait for like, you know, a day or something for the YouTube video, but now you can like see the thing now. So I want to see stuff all the time, every week. I would say that the appetite is very large. I don't think, you know, the team and ultimate team might be big enough to have enough people to, I guess, feed the appetite.
This is something, sorry, that I've always kind of found interesting because I don't think many people realize that the team development side, I don't think is actually, my impression is it's not actually as big as maybe you'd expect for a game of its size. And the fact they're turning around a game every year. Do you think that, I don't know, if they have such a massive revenue, do you think they're kind of, I don't know, keeping the purse tight in terms of the number of staff they have?
I mean, yeah, the team is pretty small. It's smaller than you would expect in a lot of senses. So, I mean, but as a community member, yeah, you shouldn't have to think about that, right? It's like you just assume big company as big as this, like they're going to have like a gigantic team. But yeah, you know, it's, like I said, the Ultimate Team is an exec's dream where it's like, it runs a certain way and it prints money, so why change it? There's no...
Yeah.
Like I said, as mad as you are at EA, you got to be mad at Konami because that's why, like, all right, if Apple's messing up, Microsoft gets better. If Microsoft's messing up, that's how Apple shows up.
I don't want to take this to, like, a whole nother level, but obviously you've got to think that it might be partly because we live in a capitalist society where, you know, if something has a monopoly, it's very difficult to break that. And why should they? Because it's not in their financial interest to change things that much. That gets into a whole other debate, which probably isn't for this podcast.
You say we should get the antitrust people involved and maybe do set up a little lawsuit?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think we need need a crackdown.
Because it's like I was telling my stream, I'm like, all right. And so this is how the situation is. Like, you're on a date with a girl, but then, you know, all right, you have the option of taking her out, but she's like, she wants to go back to your place now. Why would you take her out then? Because like you're on a date. I mean, you're, as a guy, you know what you want and they're going to give it to you. So that's the thing. It's like, if everything's working as is, you as a business, do you have to go the extra mile? No, because you're going to, because everybody's playing anyway.
Do you think they've forced into some changes recently though? Because, you know, influencers are increasingly very important apparently to marketing and to the game. They've certainly tried to change things. They've brought in a new community manager across all the games and they're advertising for a FIFA community manager. Do you think this is an attempt to kind of solve the kind of influencer issue, if you like, I suppose, if you could call it that?
Yeah, no, I think that it's a good steps they're taking. I think Like the guy, you're talking about Corey, right?
Corey's
a great, guy. He's a guy I know he's passionate about because he was a community member. Actually, he was a Madden community member. He also also plays a lot of FIFA. So he's gone the opposite way that I've gone, where I worked there and went out. He's been in the community and come in, so you can tell that he's very passionate about it. So he's the kind of guy that you need at EA. You need a lot of passion. Influencer marketing is definitely taking off. I think it's still probably the most cost-effective marketing. Because, I mean, you can make a commercial with, like, some celebrity. You can throw, like, I don't know, a Kevin Hart in there, and it'll cost you, like, a couple million to get Kevin Hart, right? Or something crazy. Or you could just, like, fly a bunch of dudes to Vancouver let them make... You can get rotor shot. You can just fly Sidemen to Vancouver or to London. Or just tell them to come out... Tell them to just drive down to London and make a couple of videos. And I'm sure that's a lot. That will get you a lot more than a Kevin Hart TV commercial, right? So they definitely need more, I guess, awareness there. And I think that's the steps that they're taking in terms of, like, influencer relations. Because, yeah, you know, a lot of, streamers, YouTubers, they do. And that's the scary thing that I noticed when I stepped out is that how much, like, it's crazy in Twitch and YouTube. Like, I can literally say, yo, guys, yeah, the freezing point of water, is 5 degrees Celsius, not zero. And, like, half the people will be like, oh, maybe that is right. I'm like, no, that's, you know, because, like, you literally just, like, listen to what some... It's great. Like, I'm so happy I didn't grow up in this time because, like, I could think for myself because... And I don't blame the kids because I don't blame anybody that's young. I think if... I mean, the generation under mine, I feel bad because it's like you're not supposed to hear this many opinions.
Not well informed in a lot of cases.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of YouTubers, a lot of guys who are actually really smart. Like, to be fair to him, I would say Nepenthes understands the entire situation probably the best, I would say, in terms of, like, how the FIFA cycle works and the ecosystem works. I would say he understands the best. So the guys like him there are very, who can see, read between the lines. Like, well, it's about education, but it's also about being able to see through the lines versus, I would say there are a lot of guys out here. For every Nepo, maybe there's, like, two or three guys who just, like, say something for the sake of something, for the sake of likes, the sake of, you know, something I saw on the other side being at EA is, like, there's an economy of hating EA. There was a time, you know, in coin selling, you're probably better off acting like you really hate EA for the sake of really hating EA because it'll make you more popular. And I think that's a thing in our community. Is like, I mean, and I don't know if there's anything we can do, but it's like, I mean, at the end of the
day. And also kind of scapegoating EA if an influencer, or YouTuber, etc. has any kind of problem or issue, kind of palming it off to being EA's fault just is easy and accepted by a lot of the community. Which
I mean, I'm not, and for anyone saying, like, I'm not excusing EA at all. I think EA needs to be a better company. Even when I was there, I thought EA needs to be a better company. They do need to improve in a lot of assets, most assets. But there is also, it's easy to blame them a lot. I think that's what I saw, especially in FIFA 15.
The thing that cracked me up a lot was, like, talking about blaming EA, is when people will make investments based off of leaks, and then it doesn't come out, they'll blame EA for... putting out the thing that came out as a leak.
The trading community, man, I swear to God, I bet you they don't like the trading community at all. I've got this weird EA sixth sense now just for being there where it's like, if I just see something on Twitter, I'm like, yeah, that would piss them off. I still have this annoying, I still have this part of my brain that's still like the community manager, and like I see something, I'm like, yep, like if that made that part of my brain mad, it made like the guys who do the content, they're freaking pissed off. And I think that the trading community, I love it because I mean, ultimately that's how I started as a trader, but it's like, come on guys, like, just chill a bit, man. It's like, I feel like as soon as like investments go wrong, like not all the time they blame them, but like, it's just like, I mean, that was your gamble, bro. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Like I was saying, it's easy to scapegoat EA, isn't it, rather than your own training ability. But Jamie, actually, I'm sure you'd like to know about this. Chew, in terms of all the leaks that people have been talking about a lot, do you think this is something EA are going to be that concerned about? I can't see it affecting like a huge amount of the foot kind of population, I suppose.
It's it affects them in terms of like, I don't know. I would say like I hate leaks. I really hate them because when I used to work there, I mean, like, so a lot of the, so for people who don't know, like, as community manager, my job was also to plan, like, the events and how they're announced. Like, when team of the season happens, when team of the year happens, I'm the guy that decides how we're going to hype it up. Like, I love hype. That's my favorite feeling. That's, like, the thing that used to, like, make the job for me. It's just, like, getting to hype people up. And you work
the original hype man, yeah.
The original hype man, man. That's all I ever wanted, just to get people hyped, because I love seeing people hyped. I love getting hyped myself. And it's like the feeling of you, like, I remember there's certain situations where certain events I remember in the past where it's like I'll be working night and day, like staying up till 2, like planning the event, planning how it's announced, and the things that, you know, you got to coordinate with different teams globally in EA, stuff like that, make sure everybody goes at the right time. And then you see a leak and it just like just takes a dump on your whole 2 weeks of planning and all your work. And so when I see a leak now, I'm just like, man, you know, somebody was doing the same thing I did where they spent their whole time planning that and one leak ruined it. You know, hey, to be fair to the community, hey, if it's out there, I mean, somebody's gonna post it. So it's not like I blame you. But, you know, when I see it, I just like, because that little emotion of hype, like, is so important in FIFA, where it's like the community's at their best when they are hyped. And if you lose that, it's like they go from when you lose that feeling of hype from the FIFA community, when they lose that, it turns into angst. It turns into disappointment really quick. Leaking can go both ways. If it's a good leak that's really hype, then it gets people like super hyped up. Like I remember when Prime Icons got leaked right before, and that was like, oh shit, Ronaldinho. And that actually amplified the announcement. But if it's, you know, and I would say that happens one out of every five or six times. But then on the other hand, if it's just like, because the community, one thing I learned is that, you know, whatever is announced, they're gonna want it to be the max, like the max level of everything, like, or else it's not as good. So run out, like, if Prime Icons got released and it was freaking, I don't know, Teddy Sheringham or something like that, okay, that'd be like, are you guys serious? But it's Ronaldinho, which the guy that everybody's always wanted, oh my god. Because anything that, they want every event, you have to almost, like, one thing I learned with, like, FUT World Cup, when we announced it, I don't know if you guys remember how FUT World Cup was announced, but I sat there because I was worried that people wouldn't like FUT World Cup because it had no transfer market. I was like, I don't know if these guys will hate on it. So I was like,
that trading community will be at you again. Just
I mean, you know, FUT World Cup's probably, I think, the biggest win I've ever seen when I was at EA in terms of like seeing so many people happy. It was also the biggest L. Because I remember when we had to say that it was delayed and the threats that we got that day. Oh, my God. Like, we just delayed it for a day. And I remember just feeling like I barely could sleep that night because just, like, people were just so mad. Because I think we said it was delayed, but we couldn't say how long it was delayed. But we knew it was only a day.
I remember that. And people thought it was going to be, like, ages.
Exactly. Like, we're mad. But we all knew. Because I remember there was just an issue. Like, there was, like, a little bug or something like that we had to fix. And it was just like, all right, it's going to take a day. But we couldn't, like, the thing with games is that, like, you can't always say.
Yeah.
You can't say
another
when.
Day, then, yeah.
Exactly. Because if something goes wrong again, you have to delay it again. And then people really get mad. So we're just like, all right, it's delayed. And then people just, like, went in. I'm like, this is the one thing you could do right. And you fucked it up. And I'm just, like, sitting at my desk, like, oh, my God.
People were like that back in FIFA 14, weren't they? You know, you'd look at the community now to some extent. It's a similar. It hasn't changed too much in that sense.
Oh, no.
People are still, what do you call them? The pitchforks are out for World Cup and stuff already. It's like.
Exactly. And it sucks to sit behind the Twitter account. It's like, you know, a lot of the people you watch on YouTube, you're fans of, but then they're just trashing your work. And it's like, oh, my God. It's like Pogba coming to me and be like, yo, Chu, your videos are trash, bro. I'm like, yo, Pogba, I love you. He's like, yeah, but dude, your streams suck. You know what I mean? And he's like, oh, my God, you know? FUT World Cup, I remember one lesson I learned, and this is something that I remember seeing. You learn this the hard way, and I remember seeing, you know, a lot of people, A lot of people are go in on Yasser. I don't know why, but you guys need to chill out. Everybody needs to chill out in the community. But because he's not even the comedian, man. Just a funny thing. But I remember seeing...
He has, like, no requirement to talk to people, right?
Exactly. So I'm just like, what the hell? And I remember him, like, he hyped up with, like, a hashtag.
It was the release of the Sergio Roberto Man of the Match. People thought it was going to be a full Barcelona team. Is that what you're thinking of? I remember people got really hyped for that. It was just, like, Sergio Roberto Man of the Match or Hero Car or something.
Exactly. and when he tweeted that, I was on stream, and, like, people in my stream can remember, I was like... I'm like, guys, it's not gonna be a full Man of the Match, like, because I made the same mistake. You can never overhype the community, never over. And this is for anybody who wants to be the future community manager, because the job is open. Never, it's better to underhype the community and over deliver. Never overhype. Yeah. And I learned the same way he did. Where I forgot how I learned, which situation I learned it. But so with Fault World Cup, I'm like, all right, you can never overhype them. So I'm like, all right, what are they expecting? They're expecting just Man of the Match cards. All right, cool. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask the designer. I'm like, all right, just put three Man of the Match cards, three FUT World Cup cards. So they think it's Man of the Match. I'm going to blur them out. So it seems like we're only hyping Man of the Match for World Cup. So it's like a silhouette, and you don't know what players they are. And I was like, all right, so people think it's going to be Man of the Match, but guess what? Full freaking World Cup mode, go nuts. And that was probably the best... I guess feeling I would have gone from the
community. I'm already hyped and it's not even happening. You've got me, yeah.
I mean, I hope they do for a World Cup. I mean, they kind of got to, honestly. I think it's money on the table.
Actually, we should talk more about that in just a second, but I think Jamie, unfortunately, has to get going.
Yeah, I have classes too.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I thought we were going to talk to you about the market, but I guess...
I can just, like, I can do, like, 2 minutes worth of it if it's worth it.
Yeah, it's a quieter time, isn't it? But what is going to bring the hype next? I think that's the question.
I mean, the two things that I've got on my radar right now in terms of, like, proximity are... St. Patrick's Day. I mean, obviously you had the promotion last year. It was pretty exciting. If you remember, they had that...
I got trash in that.
you got that green team that they released, a bunch of the Irish players. And then they had those premium pot of gold SBCs, I think they were. They were non-repeatable, so they weren't like huge deals, but they were pretty cool because you could get a coin pack from them. A lot of people did those, and Irish players went up quite a bit in price. And then obviously you've got Player of the Month coming up. February was an interesting month because there's only two games played so far, and there's only going to be three in total. And so the race is still like wide open in terms of who's going to get it. So next week can be pretty important. But in terms of people that are actually leading right now, it looks like Aguero is sort of in the front spot right now. The driver's seat, if you will. He's got two appearances, four goals, and he's got an 8.5 or something like that match rating. Ramsey's an interesting one, although he's playing for a struggling Arsenal. He's got one appearance and three goals and a 9.5 average match rating. Average over one game. But him, Mkhitaryan, and De Bruyne would also be people to watch out for. Hazard's got a decent shout as well. I think it's really all to play for this last week. And then just generally in terms of like market trends go, as we're heading into this point of the year, I think, you know, apart from SBCs and stuff like that, you know, long-term investing for like team of the week and stuff like that, prices just sort of tend to fall at this point of the year into team of the season. So I'd stay away from making like long-term investments unless you're buying players for your team. Really, the thing that you want to do is essentially like convert into trading rather than investing, like short-term stuff where you're looking for an SBC requirement to pop it. That's the market in a nutshell.
And obviously, we potentially will see upgrades.
Right, yeah.
Cool, thanks, Jamie. Thanks for summing that up really, really nice and quickly for everyone. Obviously, plenty more on your Twitter, right? @FUT_economist. And YouTube as well, which you're doing at the moment. Where can people find you?
It's basically just the same name, FUT Economist. It should pop up on YouTube. So
fantastic. Thanks for coming by, Jamie, and sharing your wisdom.
Yeah, no problem. I'll see you guys later. See you, Chu.
Cheers.
Jamie might be gone, but Chu certainly isn't. We've got a review with Chu on Prima Cotcha, World Cup mode speculation, and pros cheating. All that after this. While you're waiting, why not subscribe? You can do that via the links below this podcast on the Foothead website, or just search us Foot Weekly on your podcast provider of choice. So Chu, a man that I know you're a big fan of, and why don't you start by explaining why he's a Kocha? I know you've been using him in Ultimate Team, but as a man, I think you're quite a big fan.
Yeah, you know, so I was born in Nigeria. Both my parents are from there. I live in Canada now. And Okocha, man, I mean, that's the guy. For my generation, that was just the guy, man. I mean, I used to tell my stream, he actually kind of ruined us as a generation because me and my friends, all my friends, we all used to, and my cousins too, You know, we all Okocha. So Okocha, if kids don't know, is known for just doing the stupidest skills. Like, I don't know who I can. He was like African Neymar kind of thing back in the day. In terms of just trying to embarrass people. But the thing is that's all we enjoyed when we used to watch him. So that's all we wanted to do. So, like, most of the guys that I know, we just didn't learn how to shoot because we were too busy trying to learn how to dribble like him. you know, like, I have some friends who, like, they would go past the keeper, but they would go back to, like, try to dribble the keeper again. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Because that's what JJ would do, right?
So what would JJ do was... Every Nigerian's more
terrible. Exactly. What would JJ do? He would try. All we try to do is nutmeg like each other, but not learn how to shoot. Like, I think I was like one of the only like guys in my friend group that like just focused on just like scoring and shooting because people just want to do like skills. So that's what we learned. I mean, he just brought like entertainment. I mean, he was part of the team that won in '96. Him and Kanu, the Olympics in '96, which is probably our greatest moment in history. Where we won the gold medal. We beat Brazil in the semifinals, which had a young Ronaldo R9, even though his name was Ronaldinho, actually, on the sheet on his on his jersey. His name was Ronaldinho then, but he then upgraded to Ronaldo. He was there, I think, maybe even they had some, because it was under 23, so they had some senior players. But I remember R9 was there and a couple, I think Roberto Carlos was there too. And maybe even Bebeto was like one of the senior guys. But yeah, we beat Brazil coming back from 3-1 down, and then we beat Argentina coming back from 1-0 down in the final, and it was just like I'll never forget that day. I think the Brazil day was probably even bigger, but that was just the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, that was our golden generation, and Okocha was part of that.
Yeah, amazing. And I'd say your thing about skills doesn't really explain the development of Obi Mikel. probably isn't the most skillful player, and at least he definitely couldn't shoot. So you're right.
The funny thing is people don't realize that Mikel was like our brightest, was supposed to be like our Lionel Messi kind of, not in terms of like gameplay, but there was a time where the two brightest stars in youth football were Mikel and Messi, and they met in the final of the 2008 Olympics, and it was Nigeria versus Argentina. Argentina won with a Messi penalty, but like it was about Mikel and Messi, funny enough. And Mikel was kind of like our Modric / Fabregas, to be honest, and he still is. Like, Mikel is very different when he plays for Nigeria. He's more of an all-rounder. He does everything. He's a number 10 even. When he plays for Nigeria.
Do you know what? Yeah, I probably undersold him, but I'm just thinking of like his latter Chelsea career where he was he had that low attacking work rate on FIFA. I mean, that tells you.
Oh yeah. And man of the match, Mikel is still one of my favorite players of all time in Ultimate Team because he had the best work rate. He literally never passed the halfway line as a CDM, so the best card. And of course, yeah, Jose kind of turned him to a CDM, and that's what he was known for. But like, as soon, like, you'll see him in the World Cup, like even in World Cup 2014, like he's way more attacking. He's in the box. I mean, like when you watch Premier League, you never see Mikel in the box, but he's in the penalty area. He's doing passes. He's doing flicks. He's doing all this kind of stuff. So that's who he is for us. So he's very different for Nigeria.
So perhaps that was slightly unfair. I need to study more Nigerian football. Improve my knowledge for next time. But in terms of Okocha, as we were just talking about, you've got him on foot. You've done his SBC, which costs, I think, around 400K on Xbox. And what do you make of him? Are you enjoying him? Does he live up to the man you were watching playing as a young man?
I mean, so I definitely overhype him because he's Nigerian, and that's probably 90% of the reason why he's in my team. He's a good card. I'm not gonna say he's the best icon. He's got the skills. The skills are smooth. He's got the 5-star skills. His physical's higher, like it's 60 on the card, but I would say it's feels better. Like, he wins a lot of 1-on-1s against a lot of other CDMs and stuff like that. He's very good at getting the ball back for me. Good pace. I use him on, I go 4-2-3-1 and I use him on the right wing. I'm not going to say he's like the best player on the pitch. He's like, I had Rui Costa as well, who I put at CDM. I'll say Rui Costa is a bit better. He's at that level of like importance. He's at that level of like Rui Costa level, but I would still put Rui Costa higher. But if you can do the SBC I did it for 250, I want to say. If you can do it for about 300, then he's worth it. But I'll be perfectly honest, there are better icons out there. They're better icons. But if you want some skills, he's got a good way of showing up. His positioning is 88. He shows up a lot for a lot of rebound goals, I've noticed. But if you are very good at skilling, you think he's pretty, like, you probably get more out of him. So I would say he's worth 300k.
Yeah, I have used him not that much, but I have his loan card just because I thought it'd be useful. But having I've got Ronaldinho, so there's hardly anywhere I can kind of fit him in because he does want to play that central attacking midfield role. But I was really impressed with him considering the price that you'd end up paying, I imagine.
Yeah.
And just feels really good on the ball. A lot of...
Yeah.
And he just doesn't have the end product or the physicality to match. But you're right, he feels a little bit more aggressive than you'd expect for his stats.
Yeah.
And his stamina isn't too much of a problem because that's, I think, one of the big criticisms because he's got that medium-low work rate. So I think he's a perfectly usable player, as you say. And he's a lot of fun, isn't he? I guess that's the main takeaway, isn't it?
A lot of fun. If you can do skills, very smooth on the ball, good agility, very good agility. So you can zigzag cheese like not as like zigzag as Lozano, but you know, like close to that level. And yeah, it says his aggression is 41, but honestly, like he's a lot tougher than I expected.
Actually, just talking about, you know, international competition as we were, and before we were talking about the World Cup and then we had to chat to Jamie about the market, I just wanted to go back to talking about World Cup mode because you were quite sort of influential in getting
it
hyped, I guess. And as we were talking about when it was released and everything, what are your thoughts on World Cup this year? I think you almost feel like it has to happen, such is the mood amongst the community. Do you think we can expect any changes to the mode? Last time we saw a pack-only mode where when you open packs within the game with points, you'd actually get, or coins, you'd actually get a pack to use in the normal Ultimate Team as well. It was quite a generous system, I felt. Did that financially work well for EA? And also, do you think we'd see that again this year?
Yeah, I think I would say World Cup was definitely a success. I think at the time it had like the highest amount of people, concurrent users on FIFA. I don't know if that's been surpassed, but I know at the time it was like the highest usage numbers that we had seen at the time. And so that's why I'm like, it's a no-brainer that they would have to do it again because it was really good. It burned bright, but it burnt short, but it was very bright. I would say people played it for like 3 weeks to a month, I would say. Then they went, then they just went back to FIFA 14. But I think this time around, there's ways that they could extend that. I think hopefully they implement, there's a lot of things they can implement now. I think they can implement SBCs into it, where the idea was coming up with
that. That would be quite good, wouldn't it? Because it's pack only, that would add a whole other element.
Exactly, because I was thinking, and I've been seeing this on Twitter now, I don't know, because I actually just came up with it like randomly while I was streaming. But it could, you know, everybody knows about when World Cup happens when you were a kid, you know, the World Cup sticker packs and all that kind of stuff. I was thinking maybe they do SBCs for each country. And if you, you know, you do the pack within a pack, which I think they'll do again because that was a good mechanic to get people to try it out. Mm. Pack within a pack, you know, but, you know, there's no transfer market. So you just try to collect as many players as possible. And then if you fill out the Brazil team, you get a special SBC, I don't know, Coutinho. World Cup design Coutinho that you can use in both modes. You do that for every country has a special player, and then you're basically trying to fill out sticker books in a sense.
Yeah, because there wouldn't be as many players as in the foot database normally, right? Because you just got the World Cup players. It would be feasible for you to collect every player on a team, wouldn't it?
Exactly. So it would be very feasible. That's why you probably wouldn't need, that's why they didn't put a transfer market, I would think. Because course, again, the player pool size is completely like I think it's got to be under 1,000, right? So
it'd be interesting a lot. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was like I was actually just thinking out loud, to be honest with you.
I wanted to talk about the patches recently. There's been a lot of controversy on Twitter about pro players, and you're very significant in the esports community about pro players blocking people. And I know you run your own series speaking to pro players. This week was a particularly fascinating one, actually.
Oh boy, yeah. I got the biggest divas in the FIFA community. No, just kidding. They're great guys. They're actually really good guys to talk to. I have that thing where I invite pro players on the stream to talk. It's called Top 100 TV. And this past week I had Gorilla, Unilad Gorilla, Kurt, and FaZe Taz. So very opinionated guys. And they're really good friends. So all they do is just like bicker back and forth. And we talked about that blocking thing. I mean, those guys aren't too fussed about the blocking aspect. They're more fussed about the no loss glitching because the blocking thing, I mean, I was kind of like them. Like, I think they also were like, I expected that to happen like a long time ago, because like I was talking to you guys before, like I have blocked people online, but because like I only block people who like when they score they shush all the way to the center line and dab, like that's my
most
annoying
thing. Yeah, that is the mark
thing.
Of someone you should block, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. So anybody who does like is really like, I guess, really annoying, I'll block. So I don't want to play that person ever again. Mm. I don't know if it worked or not. I can never tell if it worked or not. That's the thing. So I don't know if it's working now. People say it is. People say it isn't. I can't get a definite like yes or no from the community.
It's going to be very hard to work out whether it's working or not, I guess, because if you block someone, you know, theoretically you're not going to play them, but you wouldn't really know whether you haven't played them or not.
Exactly, right. So, I mean, it's not like I don't know if it's cheating because you still have to play 40 games, you still have to win them, but it's definitely increasing your chances. Hopefully something that they do remove, because people are saying that in other games you can still block people, but you still match up against them. So I don't know if it's like an Xbox thing or EA thing, so maybe the two companies have to talk together. Like,
last year, people complained a lot about, well, people from places in the world where you don't get many opponents. So like someone, I think this particular person was complaining, and they were from Central Africa, and they played only a sort of very small number of people in the weekend league because there aren't that many players. And they were saying that they were really disappointed that they hidden kits, because one of the ways that they were able to not play someone with a terrible connection was to sort of see the kits or badges or whatever and realize that they weren't someone you wanted to play. And what someone had pointed out was, why don't you just block them, then you won't face them. But they said that they blocked these people and they would still come back. So certainly last year it seems that you could play people who you'd blocked. But I was wondering whether maybe blocking does stop you playing someone, but then if there really aren't any opponents, maybe it does find that person, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, in some circumstances, I think that is it, actually. I would say that that's it. If there's not that many people, then it will just give you that person either way. Yeah. So, it's frustrating that that's happening. And I think we're only noticing it now. I swear people have been doing that since like FIFA 17. So that's why I'm not like 100%, like, I'm not like outraged about it or anything, because I'm like, in my opinion, like, I feel like it's something that has been happening for years. But again, I guess the pro players are frustrated because, you know, it's things like that and the no loss glitching. I'm trying to always see it from their point of view. You put you dedicate a lot of you dedicate your life, I guess, to this game, and then you're not seeing the same dedication on the other end. But the thing with glitches is that usually with glitches like that, if they haven't been fixed, it means that they're pretty tough to fix.
That may even be an Xbox issue, no? I mean, I don't know whether they'd actually, because it's not, I don't think the problem seems to exist on PlayStation, or at least that's the claim. And I guess it could be something on Xbox's end with the blocking system.
Yeah, one of the Brazilian guys, Phenomeno, was saying something about that it does happen on PlayStation. I don't know. But again, nobody's fully confirmed or denied.
Yeah, it's a very kind of mysterious thing, because as we were saying, it's so hard to prove. One thing that I did want to kind of move on to with esports, and sort of leading on from the discussion you had, which actually, you know, obviously many of our listeners may be listening to this as a podcast, and if they want to subscribe to your podcast and hear this whole chat that you had, they can do, can't they? It's is it Top 100 TV?
Yeah, Top 100 TV, and I'll send you the link if you wanted to leave that in the description of the podcast.
And if you're listening on Foothead, you'll find the link to that just below the audio file on the website, so that will be very useful for you to find. But in terms of the whole pro scene, one of the things that came out of that was this idea that TAS mentioned, which was potentially having an invite-only pro scene. And I don't know, you might be completely in agreement, in which case this will be a very short discussion, but I thought that was incredible and slightly odd thing to say, considering that one of the big stories, probably the most amount of hype we've seen for a FIFA event, was because a guy came onto the scene completely unknown and did so well. It just seems a very narrow-minded suggestion. I mean, could you stand up for him on this? Yes, Chu will be answering that and more next week when I've got around to editing the last part of the podcast. As you'll notice, this is already quite a long one, so I wanted to just break it up. You'll look forward to hearing more from Chu on things like changes for FIFA 19, RIP Foot, Fix FIFA, adding co-op play, enjoying Foot more over these leaner months, and we'll also hear again from Jamie about upgrades and trading and things like that. So do make sure to subscribe so you get that straight away. The links are just below if you're on Foothead, or of course you can just search Foot Weekly in your podcast provider. Just go to footweeklypodcast.com/subscribe. All that remains for me to say is have a great week. Until next time, I've been Ben, who you can now follow at Foot Weekly Ben, and this has been the Foot Weekly Podcast. And of course, thanks to EastEnders for providing the cliffhanger music at the end there. If you're not from the UK, then you've lucked out because you don't know what that is. But have a Google, EastEnders. See you next time.